fellas paroled to his brother, and then they had to work for nothing. If they raised a stink, they'd get sent back for breaking parole. That's what the feller said. "Don't think about it," Ma begged him. "I'm gonna lay in a lot of stuff to eat. A lot of flour and lard." "Might's well think about it," said Tom. "Try to shut it out and it'll whang back at me. They was a screwball. Never told you about him. Looked like Happy Hooligan. Harmless kind of fella. Always was gonna make a break. Fellas all called him Hooligan." Tom laughed to himself. "Don't think about it," Ma begged. "Gone," said Al. "Tell about the fella." "It don't hurt nothing, Ma," Tom said. "This fella was always gonna break out. Make a plan, he would. But he couldn't keep it to hisself, and pretty soon everybody knowed it, even the warden. He'd make his break, and they'd take him by the hand and lead him back. Well, one time he drawed a plan where he's going over. Of course he showed it around, and everybody kept still. And he hid out, and everybody kept still. So he's got himself a rope somewheres, and he goes over the wall. They's six guards outside with a great big sack, and Hooligan comes quiet down the rope, and they just hold the sack, and he goes right inside. They tie up the mouth and take him back inside. Fellas laugh so hard they like to died. But it busted Hooligan's spirit. He just cried and cried and moped around and got sick. Hurt his feelings so bad. Cut his wrist with a pin and bled to death 'cause his feelings was hurt. No harm in him at all. They's all kinds of screwballs in stir.
"Don't talk about it," Ma said. "I knowed pretty boy Floyd's, Ma. He wasn't a bad boy. Just got drove in a corner."
The sun moved up toward noon, and the shadow of the truck grew lean and moved in under the wheels.
"Must be Pixley up the road," Al said. "Seen a sign a little back."
They drove into the little town and turned eastward on a narrower road, and the orchards lined the way and made an aisle.
"Hope we can find her easy," Tom said.
Ma said, "That fella said the Hooper Ranch. Said anybody'd tell us. Hope they's a store nearby. Might get some credit with four men working. I could get a real nice supper if they'd give me some credit. Make up a big stew, maybe."
"And coffee," said Tom. "Might even get me a sack of Durham. I ain't had no tobacco of my own for a long time."
Far ahead, the road was blocked with cars, and a line of white motorcycles was drawn up along the roadside.
"Must be a wreck," Tom said.
As they drew near, a state policeman in boots and Sam Brown belt stepped around the last parked car. He held up his hand, and Al pulled to a stop. The policeman leaned confidentially on the side of the car.
"Where you going?"
Al said.
"Fella said they was work picking peaches up this way."
"Want to work, do you?"
"Damn right," said Tom.
"Okay, wait here a minute."
He moved to the side of the road and called ahead.
"One more. That's six cars ready. Better take this batch through."
Tom called.
"Hey, what's the matter?"
The patrolman lounged back.
"Got a little trouble up ahead. Don't you worry. You'll get through. Just follow the line."
There came the splattering blast of motorcycles starting. The line of cars moved on, with the Joad truck last. Two motorcycles led the way, and two followed. Tom said uneasily,
"I wonder what's the matter."
"Maybe the road's out," Al suggested.
"Don't need four cops to lead us. I don't like it."
The motorcycles ahead speeded up. The line of old cars speeded up. Al hurried to keep in back of the last car.
"These here is our own people, all of them," Tom said. "I don't like this."
Suddenly the leading policeman turned off the road into a wide, graveled entrance. The old cars whipped after them. The motorcycles roared their motors. Tom saw a line of men standing in the ditch beside the road, saw their mouths open as though they were yelling, saw their shaking fists and their furious faces. A stout woman ran toward the cars, but a roaring motorcycle stood in her way. A high wire gate swung open. The six old cars moved through, and the gate closed behind them. The four motorcycles turned and sped back in the direction from which they had come. And now that the motors were gone, the distant yelling of the men in the ditch could be heard. Two men stood beside the graveled road. Each one carried a shotgun. One called, "Go on, go on, what the hell are you waiting for?" The six cars moved ahead, turned a bend, and came suddenly on the peach camp. There were 50 little square, flat-roofed boxes, each with a door and a window, and the whole group in a square. A water tank stood high on one edge of the camp, and a little grocery store stood on the other side. At the end of each row of square houses stood two men armed with shotguns and wearing big silver stars pinned to their shirts. The six cars stopped. Two bookkeepers moved from car to car. "Want to work?" Tom answered, "Sure, but what is this?"
"That's not your affair. Want to work?"
"Sure we do."
"Name?"
"Jode."
"How many men?"
"Four."
"Women?"
"Two."
"Kids?"
"Two."
"Can all of you work?"
"Why, I guess so."
"Okay, find house 63. Wages 5 cents a box. No bruised fruit. All right, move along now. Go to work right away."
The cars moved on. On the door of each square red house, a number was painted. 60, Tom said. "There's 60. Must be down that way. There, 61, 62. There she is." Al parked the truck close to the door of the little house. The family came down from the top of the truck and looked about in bewilderment. Two deputies approached. They looked closely into each face.
"Name?"
"Jode," Tom said impatiently. "Say, what is this here?" One of the deputies took out a long list.
"Not here. Ever see these here? Look at the license."
"Nope, ain't got it.
Guess they're okay."
"Now you look here. We don't want no trouble with you. Just do your work and mind your own business and you'll be all right."
The two turned abruptly and walked away. At the end of the dusty street, they sat down on two boxes and their position commanded the length of the street. Tom stared after them. "They sure do want to make us feel at home." Ma opened the door of the house and stepped inside. The floor was splashed with grease. In the one room stood a rusty tin stove and nothing more. The tin stove rested on four bricks, and its rusty stovepipe went up through the roof. The room smelled of sweat and grease. Rose of Sharon stood beside Ma. "We gonna live here?" Ma was silent for a moment. "Why, sure," she said at last. "It ain't so bad once we wash it out. Get her mopped." "I like the tent better," the girl said. "This got a floor," Ma suggested. "This here wouldn't leak when it rains." She turned to the door. "Might as well unload," she said. The men unloaded the truck silently. A fear had fallen on them. The great square of boxes was silent. A woman went by in the street, but she did not look at them. Her head was sunk, and her dirty gingham dress was frayed at the bottom in little flags. The pall had fallen on Ruthie and Winfield. They did not dash away to inspect the place. They stayed close to the truck, close to the family. They looked forlornly up and down the dusty street. Winfield found a piece of baling wire, and he bent it back and forth until it broke. He made a little crank of the shortest piece and turned it around and around in his hands. Tom and Pa were carrying the mattresses into the house when a clerk appeared. He wore khaki trousers and a blue shirt and a black necktie. He wore silver-bound eyeglasses, and his eyes, through the thick lenses, were weak and red, and the pupils were staring little bull's eyes. He leaned forward to look at Tom.
"I want to get you checked down," he said. "How many of you going to work?"
Tom said, "These four men. Is this here hard work?"
"Picking peaches," the clerk said. "Piecework. Give 5 cents a box."
"Ain't no reason why the little fellas can't help."
"Sure not, if they're careful."
Ma stood in the doorway. "Soon's I get settled down, I'll come out and help. We got nothing to eat, mister. Do we get paid right off?"
"Well, no, not money right off, but you can get credit at the store for what you got coming."
"Come on, let's hurry," Tom said. "I want to get some meat and bread in me tonight. Where do we go, mister?"
"I'm going out there now. Come with me."
Tom and Pa and Al and Uncle John walked with him down the dusty street and into the orchard, in among the peach trees. The narrow leaves were beginning to turn a pale yellow. The peaches were little globes of gold and red on the branches. Among the trees were piles of empty boxes. The pickers scurried about, filling their buckets from the branches, putting the peaches in the boxes, carrying the boxes to the checking station. And at the stations where the piles of filled boxes waited for the trucks, clerks waited to check against the names of the pickers.
"Here's 4 more," the guide said to a clerk. "Okay. Ever pick before?"
"Never did," said Tom.
"Well, pick careful. No bruised fruit, no windfalls. Bruise your fruit, and we won't check 'em. There's some buckets."
Tom picked up a 3-gallon bucket and looked at it. "Full of holes on the bottom."
"Sure," said the nearsighted clerk. "That keeps people from stealing them. All right, down in that section. Get going."
The 4 Jodes took their buckets and went into the orchard. "They don't waste no time," Tom said.
"Christ almighty," Al said. "I'd rather work in a garage."
Pa had followed docilely into the field. He turned suddenly on Al.
"Now you just quit it," he said. "You've been a hankering and a complaining and a bull blowing. You get to work. You ain't so big I can't lick you yet."
Al's face turned red with anger. He started to bluster. Tom moved near to him.
"Come on, Al," he said quietly. "Bread and meat. We gotta get 'em."
They reached for the fruit and dropped them in the buckets. Tom ran at his work. 1 bucket full, 2 buckets. He dumped them in a box. 3 buckets. The box was full.
"I just made a nickel," he called.
He picked up the box and walked hurriedly to the station.
"Here's a nickel's worth," he said to the checker.
The man looked into the box and turned over a peach or two.
"Put it over there. That's out," he said. "I told you not to bruise them. Dumped 'em out of the bucket, didn't you? Well, every damn peach is bruised. Can't check that one. Put 'em in easy, or you're working for nothing."
"Why, God damn it.
Now go easy. I warned you before you started."
Tom's eyes drooped sullenly.
"Okay," he said. "Okay."
He went quickly back to the others.
"Might's well dump what you got," he said. "Yours is the same as mine. Won't take 'em."
"Now, what the hell?" Al began.
"Got to pick easier. Can't drop 'em in the bucket. Gotta lay 'em in."
They started again, and this time they handled the fruit gently. The boxes filled more slowly.
"We could figure something out, I bet," Tom said. "If Ruthie or Winfield or Rosa Sharn just put 'em in the boxes, we could work out a system."
He carried his newest box to the station.
"Is this here worth a nickel?"
The checker looked them over, dug down several layers.
"That's better," he said. He checked the box in. "Just take it easy."
Tom hurried back.
"I got a nickel," he called. "I got a nickel. Only got to do that there 20 times for a dollar."
They worked on steadily through the afternoon. Ruthie and Winfield found them after a while.
"You gotta work," Pa told them. "You gotta put the peaches careful in the box. Here now, 1 at a time."
The children squatted down and picked the peaches out of the extra bucket
and a line of buckets stood ready for them. Tom carried the full boxes to the station.
"That's 7," he said. "That's 8. 40 cents we got. Get a nice piece of meat for 40 cents.
The afternoon passed. Ruthie tried to go away.
"I'm tired," she whined. "I got to rest."
"You got to stay right where you're at," said Pa.
Uncle John picked slowly. He filled one bucket to 2 of Tom's. His pace didn't change. In mid-afternoon, Ma came trudging out.
"I would have come before, but Rosa Sharn fainted," she said. "Just fainted away."
"You've been eating peaches," she said to the children.
"Well, they'll blast you out."
Ma's stubby body moved quickly. She abandoned her bucket quickly and picked into her apron. When the sun went down, they had picked 20 boxes. Tom set the 20th box down.
"A buck," he said. "How long do we work?"
"Work till dark, long as you can see."
"Well, can we get credit now? Ma ought to go in and buy some stuff to eat."
"Sure, I'll give you a slip for $1 now."
He wrote on a strip of paper and handed it to Tom. He took it to Ma.
"Here you are. You can get $1 worth of stuff at the store."
Ma put down her bucket and straightened her shoulders.
"Gets you the first time, don't it?"
"Sure, we'll all get used to it right off. Roll on in and get some food."
Ma said,
"What'll you like to eat?"
"Meat," said Tom. "Meat and bread and a big pot of coffee with sugar in. Great big piece of meat."
Ruthie wailed,
"Ma, we're tired."
"Better come along in, then."
"They was tired when they started," Pa said. "Wild as rabbits they're a-gettin'. Ain't gonna be no good at all unless we can pin 'em down."
"Soon's we get set down, they'll go to school," said Ma.
She trudged away, and Ruthie and Winfield timidly followed her.
"We got to work every day?" Winfield asked.
Ma stopped and waited. She took his hand and walked along holding it.
"It ain't hard work," she said. "Be good for you. And you're helping us. If we all work, pretty soon we'll live in a nice house. We all got to help."
"But I got so tired."
"I know. I got tired, too. Everybody gets wore out. Got to think about other stuff. Think about when you'll go to school."
"I don't want to go to no school."
"Ruthie don't neither. Them kids that goes to school, we seen 'em, Ma. Snots. Calls us Okies. We seen 'em. I ain't a-goin'."
Ma looked pityingly down on his straw hair.
"Don't give us no trouble right now," she begged. "Soon's we get on our feet, you can be bad. But not now. We got too much now."
"I ate 6 of them peaches," Ruthie said.
"Well, you'll have the skitters. And it ain't close to no toilet where we are."
The company's store was a large shed of corrugated iron. It had no display window. Ma opened the screen door and went in. A tiny man stood behind the counter. He was completely bald, and his head was blue-white. Large brown eyebrows covered his eyes in such a high arch that his face seemed surprised and a little frightened. His nose was long and thin and curved like a bird's beak, and his nostrils were blocked with light brown hair. Over the sleeves of his blue shirt he wore black sateen sleeve protectors. He was leaning on his elbows on the counter when Ma entered.
"Afternoon," she said.
He inspected her with interest. The arch over his eyes became higher.
"Howdy."
"I got a slip here for $1.
"You can get $1's worth," he said, and he giggled shrilly.
"Yes, sir. $1's worth. $1's worth."
He moved his hand at the stock.
"Any of it."
He pulled his sleeve protectors up neatly.
"Thought I'd get a piece of meat."
"Got all kinds," he said. "Hamburg. Like to have some hamburg? 20 cents a pound, hamburg."
Ain't that awful high? Seems to me Hamburg was 15 last time I got some.
Well, he giggled softly, yes, it's high, and same time it ain't high. Time you go on in town for a couple pounds of Hamburg, it'll cost you about a gallon gas. So you see, it ain't really high here, 'cause you got no gallon of gas.
Ma said sternly, it didn't cost you no gallon of gas to get it out here.
He laughed delightedly. You're looking at it bass-ackwards, he said. We ain't a-buying it. We're a-selling it. If we was buying it, why, that'd be different.
Ma put two fingers to her mouth and frowned with thought. It looks all full of fat and gristle.
I ain't guaranteeing she won't cook down, the storekeeper said. I ain't guaranteeing I'd eat her myself, but there's lots of stuff I wouldn't do.
Ma looked up at him fiercely for a moment. She controlled her voice. Ain't you got some cheaper kind of meat?
Soup bones, he said. 10 cents a pound.
But them's just bones.
Them's just bones, he said. Make nice soup. Just bones.
Got any boiling beef?
Oh, yeah, sure. That's 2 bits a pound.
Maybe I can't get no meat, Ma said. But they want meat. They said they wanted meat.
Everybody wants meat. Needs meat. That Hamburg is pretty nice stuff. Use the grease that comes out of her for gravy. Pretty nice. No waste. Don't throw no bone away.
How much is side meat?
Well, now you're getting into fancy stuff. Christmas stuff. Thanksgiving stuff. 35 cents a pound. I could sell you turkey cheaper if I had some turkey.
Ma sighed. Give me 2 pounds Hamburg.
Yes, ma'am.
He scooped the pale meat on a piece of waxed paper.
And what else?
Well, some bread.
Right here, fine big loaf, 15 cents.
That there's a 12-cent loaf.
Sure it is. Go right in town and get her for 12 cents. Gallon of gas. What else can I sell you, potatoes?
Yes, potatoes.
5 pounds for a quarter.
Ma moved menacingly toward him. I heard enough from you. I know what they cost in town.
The little man clamped his mouth tight. Then go get 'em in town.
Ma looked at her knuckles. What is this? She asked softly. You own this here store?
No, I just work here.
Any reason you got to make fun? That help you any? She regarded her shiny, wrinkled hands. The little man was silent. Who owns this here store?
Hooper Ranches, Incorporated, ma'am.
And they set the prices?
Yes, ma'am.
She looked up, smiling a little. Everybody comes in, talks like me. Is mad?
He hesitated for a moment. Yes, ma'am.
And that's why you make fun?
What you mean?
Doing a dirty thing like this. Shames you, don't it? Got to act flip, huh?
Her voice was gentle.
The clerk watched her, fascinated. He didn't answer. That's how it is,
Ma said finally.
40 cents for meat, 15 for bread, quarter for potatoes. That's 80 cents. Coffee?
20 cents the cheapest, ma'am.
And that's the dollar. 7 of us working, and that's supper.
She studied her hand.
Wrap 'em up, she said quickly.
Yes, ma'am, he said. Thanks. He put the potatoes in a bag and folded the top carefully down. His eyes slipped to Ma and then hid in his work again. She watched him and she smiled a little.
How'd you get a job like this? She asked.
A fella got to eat, he began, and then belligerently, a fella got a right to eat.
What fella? Ma asked.
He placed the 4 packages on the counter. Meat, he said. Potatoes, bread,
coffee, $1 even. She handed him her slip of paper and watched while he entered the name and the amount in a ledger.
There, he said. Now we're all even.
Ma picked up her bags. Say, she said, we got no sugar for the coffee. My boy Tom, he wants sugar. Look, she said, they're a-workin' out there. You let me have some sugar, and I'll bring the slip in later.
The little man looked away, took his eyes as far from Ma as he could.
I can't do it, he said softly. That's a rule. I can't. I'd get in trouble. I'd get canned.
But they're a-workin' out in the field now. They got more'n a dime comin'. Gimme 10 cents of sugar. Tom, he wanted sugar in his coffee, spoke about it.
I can't do it, ma'am. That's the rule. No slip, no groceries. The manager, he talks about that all the time. No, I can't do it. No, I can't. They'd catch me. They always catch fellows. Always. I can't.
For a dime?
For anything, ma'am.
He looked pleadingly at her, and then his face lost its fear. He took 10 cents from his pocket and rang it up in the cash register.
There, he said with relief.
He pulled a little bag from under the counter, whipped it open and scooped some sugar into it, weighed the bag, and added a little more sugar.
There you are, he said. Now it's all right. You bring in your slip, and I'll get my dime back.
Ma studied him. Her hand went blindly out and put the little bag of sugar on the pile in her arm.
Thanks to you, she said quietly.
She started for the door, and when she reached it, she turned about.
I'm learning one thing good, she said. Learning it all the time, every day. If you're in trouble or hurt or need, go to poor people. They're the only ones that'll help. The only ones.
The screen door slammed behind her. The little man leaned his elbows on the counter and looked after her with his surprised eyes. A plump tortoise-shell cat leaped up on the counter and stalked lazily near to him. It rubbed sideways against his arms, and he reached out with his hand and pulled it against his cheek. The cat purred loudly, and the tip of its tail jerked back and forth.
Tom and Al and Pa and Uncle John walked in from the orchard when the dusk was deep. Their feet were a little heavy against the road.
You wouldn't think just reaching up and picking it'd get you in the back, Pa said.
Be all right in a couple days, said Tom.
Say, Pa, after we eat, I'm gonna walk out and see what all that fuss is outside the gate. It's been a working on me. Wanna come?
No, said Pa. I like to have a little while to just work and not think about nothing. Seems like I just been beating my brains to death for a hell of a long time. No, I'm gonna sit a while and then go to bed.
How about you, Al?
Al looked away.
Guess I'll look around in here first, he said.
Well, I know Uncle John won't come. Guess I'll go her alone. Got me all curious.
Pa said,
I'll get a hell of a lot curiouser before I'll do anything about it. With all them cops out there.
Maybe they ain't there at night, Tom suggested.
Well, I ain't gonna find out. And you better not tell Ma where you're going. She'll just squirt her head off worrying.
Tom turned to Al.
Ain't you curious?
Guess I'll just look around this here camp. Al said.
Looking for girls, huh?
Minding my own business, Al said acidly.
I'm still a-going, said Tom.
They emerged from the orchard into the dusty street between the red shacks. The low yellow light of kerosene lantern shone from some of the doorways, and inside, in the half-gloom, the black shapes of people moved about.
At the end of the street, a guard still sat, his shotgun resting against his knee. Tom paused as he passed the guard.
"Got a place where a fella can get a bath, mister?"
The guard studied him in the half-light. At last he said, "See that water tank?"
"Yeah."
"Well, there's a hose over there."
"Any warm water?"
"Say, who in hell you think you are, J.P. Morgan?"
"No," said Tom. "No, I sure don't. Good night, mister."
The guard grunted contemptuously.
"Hot water, for Christ's sake. Be wanting tubs next."
He stared glumly after the four Jodes. A second guard came around the end house.
"Smatter, Mac?"
"Why, them goddamn Okies. Is they warm water, he says."
The second guard rested his gun butt on the ground.
"It's them government camps," he said. "I bet that fella been in a government camp. We ain't gonna have no peace till we wipe them camps out. They'll be wanting clean sheets first thing we know."
Mac asked, "How is it out at the main gate? Hear anything?"
"Well, they was out there yelling all day. State police got it in hand. They're running the hell out of them smart guys. I heard they's a long, lean son of a bitch spark plug in the thing. Fella says they'll get him tonight, and then she'll go to pieces."
"We won't have no job if it comes too easy," Mac said.
"We'll have a job, all right, these goddamn Okies. You gotta watch 'em all the time. Things get a little quiet, we can always stir 'em up a little.
Have trouble when they cut the rate here, I guess."
"We sure will. No, you needn't worry about us having work. Not while Hooper's snubbing close."
The fire roared in the Jode house. Hamburger patties splashed and hissed in the grease, and the potatoes bubbled. The house was full of smoke, and the yellow lantern light threw heavy black shadows on the walls. Ma worked quickly about the fire while Rose of Sharon sat on a box, resting her heavy abdomen on her knees.
"Feeling better now?" Ma asked.
"Smell of cooking gets me. I'm hungry, too."
"Go sit in the door," Ma said. "I got to have that box to break up anyways." The men trooped in.
"Meat, by God," said Tom. "And coffee, I smell her. Jesus, I'm hungry. I ate a lot of peaches, but they didn't do no good. Where can we wash, Ma?"
"Go down to the water tank. Wash down there. I just sent Ruthie and Winfield to wash." The men went out again.
"Go on now, Rosa Sharn," Ma ordered. "Either you set in the door or else on the bed. I got to break that box up."
The girl helped herself up with her hands. She moved heavily to one of the mattresses and sat down on it. Ruthie and Winfield came in quietly, trying, by silence and by keeping close to the wall, to remain obscure. Ma looked over at them.
"I got a feeling you little fellas is lucky they ain't much light," she said. She pounced at Winfield and felt his hair.
"Well, you got wet anyway, but I bet you ain't clean."
"They wasn't no soap," Winfield complained.
"No, that's right. I couldn't buy no soap. Not today. Maybe we can get soap tomorrow."
She went back to the stove, laid out the plates, and began to serve the supper. Two patties apiece and a big potato. She placed three slices of bread on each plate. When the meat was all out of the frying pan, she poured a little of the grease on each plate. The men came in again, their faces dripping and their hair shining with water.
"Leave me at her," Tom cried.
They took the plates. They ate silently, wolfishly, and wiped up the grease with the bread. The children retired into the corner of the room, put their plates on the floor, and knelt in front of the food like little animals. Tom swallowed the last of his bread.
"Got any more, Ma?"
"No," she said. "That's all. You made a dollar, and that's a dollar's worth."
"That?"
"They charge extra out here. We got to go in town when we can."
I ain't full, said Tom.
Well, tomorrow you'll get in a full day. Tomorrow night we'll have plenty.
Al wiped his mouth on his sleeve.
Guess I'll take a look around, he said.
Wait, I'll go with you.
Tom followed him outside. In the darkness, Tom went close to his brother.
Sure you don't want to come with me?
No, I'm going to look around, like I said.
Okay, said Tom.
He turned away and strolled down the street. The smoke from the houses hung low to the ground, and the lanterns threw their pictures of doorways and windows into the street. On the doorsteps, people sat and looked out into the darkness. Tom could see their heads turn as their eyes followed him down the street. At the street end, the dirt road continued across a stubble field, and the black lumps of haycocks were visible in the starlight. A thin blade of moon was low in the sky toward the west, and the long cloud of the Milky Way trailed clearly overhead. Tom's feet sounded softly on the dusty road, a dark patch against the yellow stubble. He put his hands in his pockets and trudged along toward the main gate. An embankment came close to the road. Tom could hear the whisper of water against the grasses in the irrigation ditch. He climbed up the bank and looked down on the dark water and saw the stretched reflections of the stars. The state road was ahead. Car lights swooping past showed where it was. Tom set out again toward it. He could see the high wire gate in the starlight. A figure stirred beside the road. A voice said, "Hello? Who is it?" Tom stopped and stood still.
"Who are you?"
A man stood up and walked near. Tom could see the gun in his hand. Then a flashlight played on his face.
"Where you think you're going?" "Well, I thought I'd take a walk. Any law against it?"
"You better walk some other way," Tom asked.
"Can't I even get out of here?"
"Not tonight, you can't. Want to walk back, or shall I whistle some help and take you?"
"Hell," said Tom. "It ain't nothing to me. If it's gonna cause a mess, I don't give a darn. Sure, I'll go back."
The dark figure relaxed. The flash went off. "You see, it's for your own good. Them crazy pickets might get you."
"What pickets?"
"Them goddamn Reds."
"Oh," said Tom. "I didn't know about them."
"You seen 'em when you come, didn't you?"
"Well, I seen a bunch of guys, but they was so many cops I didn't know. Thought it was a accident."
"Well, you better get along back."
"That's okay with me, mister."
He swung about and started back. He walked quietly along the road 100 yards, and then he stopped and listened. The twittering call of a raccoon sounded near the irrigation ditch, and very far away, the angry howl of a tied dog. Tom sat down beside the road and listened. He heard the high, soft laughter of a nighthawk and the stealthy movement of a creeping animal in the stubble. He inspected the skyline in both directions, dark frames both ways, nothing to show against. Now he stood up and walked slowly to the right of the road, off into the stubble field, and he walked bent down, nearly as low as the haycocks. He moved slowly and stopped occasionally to listen. At last he came to the wire fence, 5 strands of taut barbed wire. Beside the fence he lay on his back, moved his head under the lowest strand, held the wire up with his hands and slid himself under, pushing against the ground with his feet. He was about to get up when a group of men walked by on the edge of the highway. Tom waited until they were far ahead before he stood up and followed them. He watched the side of the road for tents. A few automobiles went by. A stream cut across the fields, and the highway crossed it on a small concrete bridge. Tom looked over the side of the bridge. In the bottom of the deep ravine, he saw a tent and a lantern was burning inside. He watched it for a moment, saw the shadows of people against the canvas walls. Tom climbed a fence and moved down into the ravine through brush and dwarf willows, and in the bottom, beside a tiny stream, he found a trail. A man sat on a box in front of the tent.
"Evening," Tom said.
"Who are you?"
"Well, I guess, well, I'm just going past."
"Know anybody here?"
"No. I tell you, I was just going past."
A head stuck out of the tent. A voice said,
"What's the matter?"
"Casey?" Tom cried. "Casey, for Christ's sake, what you doing here?"
"Why, my God, it's Tom Joad. Come on in, Tommy. Come on in."
"Know him, do you?"
the man in front asked.
"Know him? Christ, yes. Knowed him for years. I come west with him. Come on in, Tom."
He clutched Tom's elbow and pulled him into the tent. Three other men sat on the ground, and in the center of the tent a lantern burned. The men looked up suspiciously. A dark-faced, scowling man held out his hand.
"Glad to meet you," he said. "I heard what Casey said. This a fella you was telling about?"
"Sure. This is him. Well, for God's sake, where's your folks? What you doing here?"
"Well," said Tom, "we heard they was work this-a-way, and we come, and a bunch of state cops run us into this here ranch, and we been a-picking peaches all afternoon. I seen a bunch of fellas yelling. They wouldn't tell me nothing, so I come out here to see what's going on. How in hell'd you get here, Casey?"
The preacher leaned forward, and the yellow lantern light fell on his high, pale forehead.
"Jailhouse is a kind of funny place," he said. "Here's me, been a-going into the wilderness like Jesus to try to find out something. Almost got her sometimes, too. But it's in the jailhouse I really got her."
His eyes were sharp and merry.
"Great big old cell, and she's full all the time. New guys come in, and guys go out. And, of course, I talked to all of them."
"Course you did," said Tom. "Always talk. If you was up on the gallows, you'd be passing the time of day with a hangman. Never seen such a talker."
The men in the tent chuckled. A wizened little man with a wrinkled face slapped his knee.
"Talks all the time," he said. "Folks kind of likes to hear him, though."
"Used to be a preacher," said Tom. "Did he tell that?"
"Sure he told."
Casey grinned.
"Well, sir," he went on, "I begin getting at things. Some of them fellas in the tank was drunks, but mostly they was there 'cause they stole stuff. And mostly it was stuff they needed and couldn't get no other way. You see?"
he asked.
"No," said Tom.
"Well, they was nice fellas, you see. What made 'em bad was they needed stuff. And I begin to see then, it's need that makes all the trouble. I ain't got it worked out. Well, one day they give us some beans that was sour. One fella started yelling, and nothing happened. He yelled his head off. Trusty come along and looked in and went on. Then another fella yelled. Well, sir, then we all got yelling, and we all got on the same tone, and I tell you, it just seemed like that tank bulged and give and swelled up. By God, then something happened. They come a-running, and they give us some other stuff to eat. Give it to us, you see?"
"No," said Tom.
Casey put his chin down on his hands.
"Maybe I can't tell you," he said. "Maybe you got to find out. Where's your cap?"
"I come out without it."
"How's your sister?"
"Hell, she's big as a cow. I bet she got twins. Gonna need wheels under her stomach. Got to holdin' it with her hands now. You ain't told me what's going on."
The wizened man said,
"We struck. This here's a strike.
Well, 5 cents a box ain't much, but a fella can eat.
5 cents, the wizened man cried. 5 cents. They paying you 5 cents?
Sure, we made a buck and a half.
A heavy silence fell in the tent. Casey stared out the entrance into the dark night.
Look at Tom, he said at last. We come to work there. They says it's gonna be 5 cents. There was a hell of a lot of us. We got there, and they says they're paying 2.5 cents. A fella can't even eat on that, and if he got kids. So we says, we won't take it. So they drove us off, and all the cops in the world come down on us. Now they're paying you 5. When they bust this here strike, you think they'll pay 5?
I dunno, Tom said. Paying 5 now.
Looky, said Casey. We tried to camp together, and they drove us like pigs, scattered us. Beat the hell out of fellas, drove us like pigs. They run you in like pigs, too. We can't last much longer. Some people ain't et for 2 days. You going back tonight?
Aim to, said Tom.
Well, tell the folks in there how it is, Tom. Tell 'em they're starving us and stabbing theirself in the back. 'Cause sure as cow flops, she'll drop to 2.5 just as soon as they clear us out.
I'll tell 'em, said Tom. I don't know how. Never seen so many guys with guns. Don't know if they'll even let a fella talk. And folks don't pass no time of day. They just hang down their heads and won't even give a fella a howdy.
Try and tell 'em, Tom. They'll get 2.5 just the minute we're gone. You know what 2.5 is. That's 1 ton of peaches picked and carried for $1.
He dropped his head.
Nope. You can't do it. You can't get your food for that. Can't eat for that.
I'll try to get to tell the folks.
How's your ma?
Pretty good. She liked that government camp. Baths and hot water.
Yeah, I heard.
It was pretty nice there. Couldn't find no work, though. Had to leave.
I'd like to go to one, said Casey. Like to see it. Fella says they ain't no cops.
Folks is their own cops.
Casey looked up excitedly.
And was they any trouble? Fighting? Stealing? Drinking?
No, said Tom.
Well, if a fella went bad, what then? What'd they do?
Put him out of the camp.
But they wasn't many.
Hell no, said Tom. We was there a month and only one.
Casey's eyes shone with excitement. He turned to the other men.
You see? He cried. I told you. Cops cause more trouble than they stop. Look, Tom, try and get the folks in there to come on out. They can do it in a couple days. Them peaches is ripe. Tell 'em.
They won't, said Tom. They're getting 5 and they don't give a damn about nothing else.
But just the minute they ain't strike-breaking, they won't get no 5.
I don't think they'll swallow that. 5 they're a-gettin'. That's all they care about.
Well, tell 'em anyways.
Pa wouldn't do it, Tom said. I know him. He'd say it wasn't none of his business.
Yes, Casey said disconsolately. I guess that's right. Have to take a beatin' before he'll know.
We was out of food, Tom said. Tonight we had meat. Not much, but we had it. Think Pa's gonna give up his meat on account of other fellas? And Rosa Sharn ought to get milk. Think Ma's gonna want to starve that baby just 'cause a bunch of fellas is yelling outside a gate?
Casey said sadly,
I wish they could see it. I wish they could see the only way they can depend on their meat. Oh, the hell. Get tired sometimes. god-awful tired. I knowed a fella. Brang him in while I was in the jailhouse. Been trying to start a union. Got one started, and then them vigilantes busted up. And know what? Them very folks he'd been trying to help tossed him out. Wouldn't have nothing to do with him. Scared they'd get saw in his company. Says, get out. You're a danger on us. Well, sir, it hurt his feelings pretty bad. But then he says, it ain't so bad if you know. He says, French Revolution. All them fellas that figured her out got the heads chopped off. Always that way, he says. Just as natural as rain. You didn't do it for fun, no way. Doing it 'cause you have to. 'Cause it's you. Look at Washington, he says. Fit the revolution, and after them sons of bitches turned on him. And Lincoln the same. Same folks yelling to kill him. Natural as rain.
Don't sound like no fun, said Tom.
No, it don't. This fella in jail, he says, anyways, you do what you can. And, he says, the only thing you got to look at is that every time there's a little step forward, she may slip back a little, but she never slips clear back. You can prove that, he says, and that makes the whole thing right. And that means there wasn't no waste even if it seemed like there was.
Talking, said Tom, always talking. Take my brother Al. He's out looking for a girl. He don't care about nothing else. Couple days he'll get him a girl. Think about it all day and do it all night. He don't give a damn about steps up or down or sideways.
Sure, said Casey. Sure. He's just doing what he's got to do. All of us like that.
The man seated outside pulled the tent flap wide.
God damn it, I don't like it, he said.
Casey looked out at him.
What's the matter?
I don't know. I just itch all over, nervous as a cat.
Well, what's the matter?
I don't know. Seems like I hear something, and then I listen and they ain't nothing to hear.
You're just jumpy,
the wizened man said. He got up and went outside, and in a second he looked into the tent.
There's a great big old black cloud a-sailing over. Bet she's got thunder. That's what's itching him. Electricity.
He ducked out again. The other two men stood up from the ground and went outside. Casey said softly,
all of 'em's itchy. Them cops been saying how they're gonna beat the hell out of us and run us out of the county. They figure I'm a leader 'cause I talk so much.
The wizened face looked in again.
Casey, turn out that lantern and come outside. There's something.
Casey turned the screw. The flame drew down into the slots and popped and went out. Casey groped outside and Tom followed him.
What is it?
Casey asked softly.
I don't know. Listen.
There was a wall of frog sounds that merged with silence. A high, shrill whistle of crickets. But through this background came other sounds. Faint footsteps from the road. A crunch of clods up on the bank. A little swish of brush down the stream.
Can't really tell if you hear it. Fools you. Get nervous.
Casey reassured them.
We're all nervous. Can't really tell. You hear it, Tom?
I hear it, said Tom. Yeah, I hear it. I think these guys coming from ever which way. We better get out of here.
The wizened man whispered,
under the bridge span, out that way. Hate to leave my tent.
Let's go, said Casey.
They moved quietly along the edge of the stream. The black span was a cave before them. Casey bent over and moved through, Tom behind. Their feet slipped into the water.
30 feet they moved, and their breathing echoed from the curved ceiling. Then they came out on the other side and straightened up. A sharp call. There they are! 2 flashlight beams fell on the men, caught them, blinded them. Stand where you are! The voices came out of the darkness. That's him. That shiny bastard. That's him! Casey stared blindly at the light. He breathed heavily.
Listen, he said. You fellows don't know what you're doing. You're helping to starve kids.
Shut up, you red son of a bitch!
A short, heavy man stepped into the light. He carried a new white pick handle. Casey went on,
You don't know what you're a-doin'.
The heavy man swung with a pick handle. Casey dodged down into the swing. The heavy club crashed into the side of his head with a dull crunch of bone, and Casey fell sideways out of the light.
Jesus, George, I think you killed him.
Put the light on him, said George. Serve the son of a bitch right.
The flashlight beam dropped, searched, and found Casey's crushed head. Tom looked down at the preacher. The light crossed the heavy man's legs and the white new pick handle. Tom leaped silently. He wrenched the club free. The first time he knew he had missed and struck a shoulder, but the second time his crushing blow found the head, and as the heavy man sank down, 3 more blows found his head. The lights danced about. There were shouts, the sound of running feet, crashing through brush. Tom stood over the prostrate man, and then a club reached his head, a glancing blow. He felt the stroke like an electric shock, and then he was running along the stream, bending low. He heard the splash of footsteps following him. Suddenly he turned and squirmed up into the brush, deep into a poison oak thicket, and he lay still. The footsteps came near. The light beams glanced along the stream bottom. Tom wriggled up through the thicket to the top. He emerged in an orchard, and still he could hear the calls, the pursuit in the stream bottom. He bent low and ran over the cultivated earth. The clods slipped and rolled under his feet. Ahead he saw the bushes that bounded the field, bushes along the edges of an irrigation ditch. He slipped through the fence, edged in among vines and blackberry bushes, and then he lay still, panting hoarsely. He felt his numb face and nose. The nose was crushed, and a trickle of blood dripped from his chin. He lay still on his stomach until his mind came back, and then he crawled slowly over the edge of the ditch. He bathed his face in the cool water, tore off the tail of his blue shirt, and dipped it and held it against his torn cheek and nose. The water stung and burned. The black cloud had crossed the sky, a blob of dark against the stars. The night was quiet again. Tom stepped into the water and felt the bottom drop from under his feet. He threshed the 2 strokes across the ditch and pulled himself heavily up the other bank. His clothes clung to him. He moved and made a slopping noise. His shoes squished. Then he sat down, took off his shoes, and emptied them. He wrung the bottoms of his trousers, took off his coat, and squeezed the water from it. Along the highway he saw the dancing beams of the flashlights, searching the ditches. Tom put on his shoes and moved cautiously across the stubble field. The squishing noise no longer came from his shoes. He went by instinct toward the other side of the stubble field, and at last he came to the road. Very cautiously he approached the square of houses. Once a guard, thinking he heard a noise, called, "Who's there?" Tom dropped and froze to the ground, and the flashlight beam passed over him. He crept silently to the door of the Jode house. The door squalled on its hinges, and Ma's voice, calm and steady and wide awake, "What's that?" "Me, Tom." "Well, you better get some sleep. Al ain't in yet. He must have found a girl. Go on to sleep, she said softly, over under the window. He found his place and took off his clothes.